In this episode, I have my friend Michael as a returning guest. I think this is his third time he's been on the Banquet Life podcast as a guest. We love him and appreciate him. He's getting it done. He's salt of the earth kind of individual. And we really get into some practical aspects of becoming your own banker and actually controlling the banking function. And we had fun doing so. Hope you enjoy listening.
I don't know what the statistics are, but there's a lot of most auto financed, you know, probably less to the extent now, but it's still happening to a greater extent. Negative equity on vehicles, so that when you go in and you're trading in a vehicle onto the next vehicle, you may owe more than what the value of the car is.
So, add to that cash flow, they'll sell you some gap insurance.
Right. Which is what? It's a finance cost. Why? Yeah. Because we don't know that there may be another way, or we do know, but we're not willing to select that as opposed to traditional sense. But regardless, there's money that is an outflow from your personal economy going to someone else in order to keep this, what I would call a liability, right? It's an outflow every month versus when I started thinking about at the very basics of what we are achieving with becoming our own banker is, you know, like you kind of led into this conversation about recapturing the interest that we were otherwise giving up to a third party lender. And then the whole valuation of our capital, if the lender values their capital at 5, maybe I should at the very minimum value my capital at the same rate of 5%. Now, you know, you've taught me, Nelson's taught me, if I value theirs at 5, I should probably value mine a lot higher than someone else, some stranger or some entity that I don't know. Whether it's 5%, 10%, 15%, we get to choose. So regardless, but if I'm using one of my system of policies to finance that same vehicle, well, not only am I recapturing the interest that I was giving up to the third party lender that they're getting to profit from having a pool of capital to access, but the principal that I was also sending to the lender, I'm recapturing that as well, right? The accumulated interest, the accumulated, that whole volume of principal interest. And then there's the other thing that's not on the illustration, is the control of that finance agreement with the lender is the control over that capital, right? So all I'm doing is recapturing that monthly principal and interest back into my pool of capital in the form of PUA, loan repayment. It doesn't matter to me. Well, it does matter, but in this example, like, all of that is being returned to my system. That's freeing up collateral for the future, right? So it's not leaving my personal economy. It's going back into my bank that I control, and then it's ready to be used or not used. And I think that's important too, or not used until I say when. So I don't know how you put, that's kind of an unseen or maybe like less spoken of aspect when I started thinking about it, of that whole transaction. That's the volume. It's not the volume of interest, which is a component, but it's the volume of principal as well that's being returned back to where I house it.
Yeah, I love that. we can all go on, you know, calculator.com or wherever. I think that's one I kind of like to just whip up. Calculators, they have all kinds, you know. And if you look at a mortgage, it's very easy to see the mortgage. You know, if I buy a $400,000 house, I do a 30-year fixed, you know, I'm gonna repay it somewhere around 800 grand or more, right? Half of that or more is going to be interest over that whole time period. Well, that's half of it, right? And what you know, the discussions that we've had previously, well, there's still $400,000 in principal that's being paid and $400,000 in interest. That whole cash flow over that whole time period, whatever it is, does return to your system. And, and I'm just saying most people in, or it's just often not discussed, the whole debt service, the principal component in the cash flow.
And, we're not even talking about, James, and we're not even talking about the flexibility, because with having the control and the power, well, by design, but having the control of sitting at all sides of that lending equation, that entity that you and Ryan were talking about on episode 245, when you're at all seats of that table, and if you need to pivot, or if the unknown happens and you don't want to or can't make a loan repayment, you know, on the schedule that you originally designed for yourself, because no loan should be taken without a repayment schedule, right? And being an honest banker, is we're not allowed to steal the peas if you're doing this right. That you can pivot, and that's like where is that on a you know, a financing contract with a traditional third party lender? So, like I'll give you an example, because then this is how much I'm caring less about rates of interest and rates of return and loan interest and things. Is that I think we were recording with, I had a 2 years ago, or maybe last year, I purchased a used vehicle because I don't drive it. But I don't,
that was recorded.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so that was recorded. So I kind of casually, like I paid that you know, that the loan amount was about $13,500. I initially, again, because I'm the lender, I'm the borrower, I'm the one that has to satisfy my own lending criteria, right? Is it something that I really want, or is it a need? If I need it, what is it that I need? And going through that whole process. But I originated that loan through a policy loan. And initially I was just like, well, what do I want? What do I want my car payment to be? Well, I get paid every other week. So I was like, well, I don't know. I'm not going to spend a lot of time thinking about it. I'm just going to every 2 weeks, $500, and just see what that feels like. Right, because I'm a feel person now with this concept, at least, because I know I'm not losing control over that $500. All I'm doing is reducing the loan balance, right? So any associated interest that would be associated after, you know, for the term of that portion of the loan, okay, there's going to be some interest to it, like, irrelevant to me now. But that volume of that payment goes, what, it reduces my outstanding loan balance, which my cash value goes back up, that death benefit associated with it gets pushed back up. So all I'm doing is I'm just filling up the pond of water. So if it's $500, we'll let it be $500 and see how that feels. So I did that for a couple of months, and I'm like, I'm not really feeling any different. Like, it's not challenging me. Right. Yeah. Well, just like you said, with our originally policy design, like, hey, what is it that you think that you can pay in premium and then just pay a little bit more, get a little, what makes you a little uncomfortable, you know? So I hear that even in my loan repayment. So it's like, well, it's $500. All right. That really, I didn't feel any, you know, physical pain or emotional pain with that. So let's just, I don't know, $750 on the next one and see what happens. And so I'm like, well, what crazy human being on a $13,000 car would pay $1,500 a month as a car payment? You know, and I'm like, well, I hope not many people, right? Especially if I was paying that to someone else. But all I was doing is, you know, replenishing my own pool of capital. So I'm like, well, if $750 like really hurt, okay, go back down to $500, because I can control that. Yep. Right. So it ended up, you know, I kept it at $750 like every 2 weeks. And I think it was, I don't know, it's within like 8 months or something that loan had been satisfied. Cause I just have a little simple Excel spreadsheet for that, you know, for my car purchase. And so I went, and at the time the loan rate was 5%. So 5% simple interest, whatever. So I go like, okay, well, that's annualized. So, but I did it in 10 months. So let's just kind of, you know, average daily balance, you know, for the outstanding loan. Let's just see like what the true interest rate, you know, just out of curiosity.
Yeah.
and it was like
that 1.2%. Right.
That I actually paid according. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was like 1.2%.
What?
And I was going like, I think and get it. Like I get it more because of this one little exercise of just kind of halfway paying attention that it wasn't 5%. It was 1%. I returned all the cash flow that would have been given to someone else. So one, the stated interest wasn't the real interest, right? All the capital has been returned to my policy and I maintain control of the whole thing. And now, even as an added benefit, the vehicle itself is no longer a liability because it has some sort of value into the market. So if I want to get rid of it or anything, not having any lien on it or anything like that, I can actually sell that before I trade it in on something else. And now I have future PUA because I don't owe anything. Like no one else is involved in this equation. So I'm like, well, what's that stinking really worth? I don't even know how to put a dollar amount on it.
No, you can't. You can't. There's nowhere that any of that can go, you know, in a life insurance illustration. You can find that, you know, put numbers, you know, calculate. Well, the life insurance charged me 5 as an annual percentage loan rate. Mm-hmm. You accelerated the loan repayment because you were in control of that. So you didn't actually pay the 5% because the whole loan was not outstanding for the annual 12-month time period. You repaid it in 12 months. And it was 1.9? Is that what you said? 1.9?
No, it was like 1.1, 1.2.
1.1.
When I saw like the one handle, I just kind of snickered and just closed the file. I'm like, okay, this is silly.
Yeah. So the rate was 5, but you were only charged 1.1 because of your actions. I mean, there's so much there. It's like Nelson always said, and it's true, you know, the action of the owner has a greater bearing on the results than the life insurance company does. And that's with every policy, right? Every single policy. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so
Sorry.
No, you go ahead.
No, but I was like, that's why it's like the book and the principles are so important of one, not only reading, but actually understanding and then living it out because it just is. But that's like the discipline that it's such a healthy discipline of practicing this concept. And like this is the tangible or the numerical side of the validation of,
looking back and counting the numbers, you know, it's like, oh, checking the fig. And it's like, it just validates. It's exactly what it does. It's like, you know, we can all tweak out on the numbers. And the more engineer type you are, and I love engineers, it's like you can get lost in those numbers if you want and therefore not apply and therefore not actually achieve or receive what you're trying to figure out. You know what I mean? So, but there is a lot there. So, I want to touch on these, right? So Nelson talks about the interest, quote unquote, on page 58, becoming your own banker. And what he's talking about there, if the insurance company charges me 5 and I repay the loan at 10, if I have the ability to put that additional 5% into a PUA, right, or have it allocated to another policy in some form of premium, right, then it's the interest that I'm paying the life insurance company is a real interest charge. In your case, you know, you paid 1.1, even though they're charging 5. And if you pay more than the interest rate that the insurance company is charging you, the loan interest rate, you're either going to pay the outstanding balance off sooner, right? Or you're going to tell the life insurance company, hey, apply this to the PUA, this additional money to the PUA. Or you're going to say, hey, I got to go buy another policy, you know, as a place to put this interest or have a segregated checking account for that additional quote unquote interest to reside in before or until it can become a premium in a policy, right? Okay, so the additional interest is beautiful. It's additional capital to you. We're calling it interest, right? But it's additional premium to the life insurance company, right? And I love that. It's so powerful. So you're paying
because all it is, James, is by default, you're paying off a loan compared to what you would get out in the marketplace. Yep. You're paying it off early.
Yep.
Right. So had you gone out into the marketplace and say there was 48 months versus you paid it off in 40, well, 8 months is like a bonus to me, right? It's I'm already in this habit of paying. Well, now instead of loan repayment, it's been satisfied. Well, now it's just going to go to PUA until that 48th month, right? And now it's kind of resume normal activities, right? And that's all it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like a game that we play with ourselves. But then the economics behind it is you're paying the life insurance company interest. Well, what's the benefit of you paying the life insurance company interest? Spend a minute on that, right? Well, they're a mutual company that are owned by the policyholders, which you are a policyholder. So you're an owner of the company. And so just, you know, would you want any company that you own to be profitable or not profitable? It's a simple question.
Oh my gosh, so profitable. Okay.
And so you want the you're directly supporting the profitability of a company that you are a fractional owner of. And it is their financial experience, the life insurance company's financial experience in a given year, is how they determine whether they pay dividends or not. Right? So a dividend that is paid by a mutual company is paid to the policyholders. That is a policyholder's share of the financial experience of a life insurance company. And sometimes it's harder for people to understand that or not, but sometimes it's not. I'm directly supporting the profitability of a company that I own. There's no question that I'm paying them interest, and I want them to be profitable. And the more profitable they are, because it's mutual and I'm owner, I'm indirectly supporting the profitability of my policy. Am I actually paying them interest? Yes, no question. And then whenever you control the loan like you did, yeah, the loan interest rate could be 5, 5.5, 6, 6.5, whatever it is. But then you paid the loan down sooner. So you weren't actually charged the 5, 6, 6.5. You actually paid 1.1 in your example. And then, you know, as you alluded to earlier, you know, when you have the cash value, you have the cash value never leaves the policy. When you borrow, you're borrowing the life insurance company's money. You're just placing a lien on the cash value in proportion to your loan. So if you have $100,000 cash value, borrowed $50,000, the $50,000 never came out of your policy. You just placed a lien on half of your cash value. In my example, you have a $50,000 loan. Mm-hmm. Then every time you make a loan repayment, oh, that collateral goes down.
It gets released.
More cash value is available for the next project. That is so not hard, you know.
Yeah, and again, like, you know, I'm learning as a challenge to myself as I get older is it's okay to fight for simplicity.
Yep.
And make things simple and because society tries to, you know, we try to overcomplicate everything. And, you know, just like with some of the, you know, we'd like to jump to the right side of the equal sign without knowing the variables on the left that, you know, A plus B plus X, like really just understanding, well, what is A? Well, why is A, you know, and then eventually we get to the right side of the equal sign. And I think that's,
getting the characters right in the play, kind of going back to earlier. Mm-hmm. You said, you know, you're going to be the borrower, no question, you know, and you get to control that because you're also the banker. So you get to control the structure of the loan, the structure of the loan repayment, the interest that you choose to pay, quote unquote interest, then the actual interest that you actually pay. And you get a control because then you're the bank owner as well. So then you get to control the whole cash flow and benefit of the whole cash flow, not just the interest. So you're the bank owner, right? You're the borrower. And you're the banker, but you're also the quote unquote depositor. So there's four hats in a bank, right? And you get to own and control all of those positions. There's where else can you go do that? I don't know how else you could do that, right?
But then, like the ownership though, James, is if you know how the importance of all those seats in that equation, like you owe it to yourself to have some really good discussions about how to use that capital. what is important to me and my family? Where are we trying to go as a family unit, not just self? Because I think about mom and sister and my nieces and stuff like that as well. Like, yep. What I try and anticipate, what are things that they may need and what's important to us? And then be willing to, you know, discard things that are not important, you know, and have those really healthy discussions, because those things are going to need to be financed. Well, now the next question is, well, what is that thing that needs to be financed? Is it a want? Is it a need? Is it a, I hope this works out, or, you know, whatever. And like, well, you can have those awesome discussions too. Another benefit that I've learned, more so that, you know, an unintended value of this process is knowing that I have capital that's always growing, that it's safe, it's liquid, and it's growing at a compounded conservative rate by volume, which is, you know, awesome, that it buys me time to figure out what is it that's important to me, whether it is an investment or whether it is a vehicle or a vacation, whatever those things are. But while I'm deciding, or maybe just sitting on the sideline, I've given the horse a job, right? It's out there working. Cause I remember that's a phrase that when I was in the office last time you said it, and it's just hugely powerful in so many ways, is, your money is like a horse. You got to give it a job or it'll wander off.
Right.
Right. And so like, well, the horse is over there working. I've given it jobs. So now I can either pause and do nothing. Maybe like in today's financial climate, I'm a big believer in pause, you know, and it's okay to be on the sidelines.
Yep.
You know, you have what, December, the Fed, you know, took their third rate cut. We're now down like 100 basis points off of their high. So they lowered Fed funds rate by another 25 basis points in December. So, and you take a look at the bond market, and all of a sudden the 10-year treasury shot up, having the opposite effect of loosening monetary policy. So there's some unintended, like, you know, the rate went down, but then the yields go up. And then, so what is the bond, you know, what is the bond market saying? What is the, you know, all these things going on? Is like, what I know is the yield curve is normalized, quote normalized. There's still a couple of like treasuries that are still inverted a bit, but the curve is normalizing, which is super scary right now. Real estate deal don't pencil, you know, like, especially out here, you know, just casually, I get some emails every now and then from a friend, because they're trying to get me to buy like a beach property. And I'm like, I don't make beach property kind of money, you know, or I don't want to afford that either, even if I could. And it's like, oh, what's a duplex? Well, it's $2.3 million is what its listed price. So you just go like, okay, traditional finance, $17,000 a month as a mortgage. And I was like, well, if I could find tenants for like two of the units and maybe live in the third, like, who's going to pay $12,000 or $13,000 in rent? You know, because it just doesn't pencil on the revenue side before you even get to the expenses of operating a property in California where nothing is in your favor as an owner.
They've got that Airbnb price, huh?
yeah. So it's just like, well, okay. Well, had I, you know, if I'm solely relying on the next investment, you know, good luck right now, because there's not a lot of things that make sense. But he who has the gold makes the rules. So, but what can I do in the interim? Well, maybe it's good to keep my head down and just work and store capital, and then learn, see, you know, learn more about a new subject, figure out if a pivot in real estate or whatever other type of investing makes sense. But being able to devote some hard-earned, some good, effective time and going through that process while the horse is over there working.
I love that. You know, there's value in having accessible capital, period. There's real value in that. And then, you know, I've said it many times, you know, capital attracts opportunity. When you have capital, everything walking down the road that presents itself as an opportunity is not actually an opportunity, you know? And I know that capital is still flowing into the U.S. And I'm not saying it's going to last forever, but the idea that the dollar is going to crash and all of these third world countries, no disrespect to them, are going to take over the dollar. It's like, get out of town. It may happen, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. Why? Because with the capital inflows, it strengthens the dollar. You go out all you just you have money. You're looking for a place, a safe place to put it. You go tell me what country you're going to put it in. Where you want to send your money to France? You want to send your money to Germany? You want to send your money to Canada? You know, I mean, South America, Africa. I mean, where are you going to where are you going to send your? You want to send your money to Switzerland? You know, they've rolled over 19 times on privacy. So, you know, the and I just want to make the point: there's capital inflow to the U.S. There has been for some time. And it's going to continue for some time, which makes the dollar strong. So there's no. I don't believe that, yes, is the dollar being devalued every day? Yes, it is.
Yes.
But just because of that does not make me want to, you know, go buy more gold or more silver or more cryptocurrency. It sure as hell doesn't want me. I have no interest in opening a foreign bank account. You know, no. I'm just saying the dollar is strong. It's going to remain strong for some time. I love property. I love silver. I love real assets. But I'm with you as far as real estate goes. I haven't seen a deal in a minute. It's been a minute. And here we are, you know, Central Texas. Everybody's moving from your state to ours or California or Florida. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and rightly so. But, you know, there's but going back to what you're saying about the currency stuff, you know, that's all unknown. You know, it's if they think that Michael from Southern California knows when the currency is going to fail, then well, one, shame on me for thinking that I know that because I don't have any of that expertise. Right. But then don't listen to me because I'm a nobody. I don't know. But in the but, you know, I've heard like, you know, like Peter Schiff, who's an economist that I follow, you know, yeah. He's like, well, the U.S. is still it's the cleanest. It's the cleanest dirty laundry in the basket, you yep. know? So are yep. we dirty? Yeah. But we're still yep. cleaner compared to other nations and other currencies. So, do I wish we had more sound money? Yes. Cause I think if you know, were more, if we were more honest as a nation and as a people, before we give $2 billion or whatever it is to some foreign entity, if we were able you know, to take a step back, maybe divide that by 330 million and then immediately send that check with an immediate due date to every citizen because we have to pay for that spending right then and there, like you and I do at our level. I think more people would have, would be more cautious that, and their expectations would change of their government of what we're doing with, you know, sending money offshore for whatever reason it is. If we said, oh yeah, that's a good idea. We need to support X country. Okay, well, we're sending you a check for $7,000 along with every other American due in 15 days. And we're like, whoa, wait a minute. Like, where I got to find $5,000. Because that would be sound or more sound.
I can't argue. I mean, yeah. I'm about as non-political as they come.
And, likewise.
I think all of them up there in D.C. should stop, quit, go home. We'll be fine. And I think what would happen is we would just become naturally wealthy because we have sound money. And so, therefore, we can store the labor of our fruits, the fruits of our labor without you know, losing value by the minute. Mm-hmm. I mean, we would become uber wealthy. But so let me recap that. I'm an anarcho-capitalist. You know, I believe in zero government, that the free markets, I know we don't have free markets, but the free markets are the best solutions. And for my libertarians that don't believe you can exist without some form of government, I'm inclined to believe or agree with you. But until we get close to no government, I'm an anarcho-capitalist. If we get down to small government, you know, I might modify and adjust my beliefs. There's nothing that the government produces or provides nothing. There's not one product they produce. They don't provide anything. What do they protect your borders? What do they protect your money? Do they, there's nothing here. I'm going to probably have to cut this rant out. And I'm saying this, it's not my friend, Michael, it's me. You are the solution. You, the listener, the viewer, if you can hear my voice, you are the solution. Exactly to the point that you are the solution of your money and you are the solution of controlling the banking function in your life. It's you. Go look in the mirror, pull your big boy pants up and by God, understand you are the solution. You can do it. So I mean that in all love and encouragement. So sorry about that.
Yeah.
I'm not, if it makes it out there to the big wide world, perfect. If it doesn't, it'll be somewhere in the cutting room floor. I don't know. But, it's because of fractional reserve banking. It's because of, this out of control taxation, which, they don't have to. As a matter of fact, if you can print all the money that you want, and there's no limit, which they've proven that. The central banking systems around the world have proven that they can print as much as they want. Then what really is a reason for taxation? I have come to the belief over my 61 years on the face of this earth, 33 years searching for the truth about money, that the tax structure is nothing but control, right? But because they can print money out of thin air, because they raise taxes to no end, they do not see an end to their need for your capital, right? And if you think any other way, you just need to continue paying attention to what's going on. That causes inflation, the apparent rising cost of goods and services, which is a result of an expansion of the money supply. Austrian economics, whether you agree or disagree, those three things are headwinds to us everyday all American people. Taxation, inflation, right? And then inflation is the devaluation of money. I mean, these are headwinds, and the only thing that I know and have experienced that can combat that at the you and me level is the infinite banking concept. I don't know of any other, financial method, creation, strategy on the face of this earth. Now, that doesn't mean that real estate investing is not good or you can't be profitable. That doesn't mean that, crypto, the token that you own may go up in value and you may sell it when it's up in value. That doesn't mean everything else has no value or is bad, making a moral judgment. I'm not. I'm saying if you want to control the cost of taxation and inflation and then the interest charged against you and everything that you do, the infinite banking concept may be worth looking into. So I'll just leave it at that. I don't get too preachy here, sir.
I'm listening. This is my time to listen.
But all right, so what else would you like to cover? I mean, anything? I love the fact that we've talked about interest, mm-hmm. the interest that the life insurance company charges, which you cannot control. Neither can you control the dividend scale, you, the individual, right? But in your example and your experience and what you did, the interest rate was 5. The loan interest rate from the life insurance company was 5, but you actually only paid a little over 1 because you shortened the time. The loan repayment, the schedule, mm-hmm. right? That's mm-hmm. pretty powerful. And then what is this additional interest? Nelson speaks about it in page 58.
It's premium.
Premium to the life insurance company, capital to your system, right? But then also we didn't really touch on that, and I want to. If you were paying that $750 every 2 weeks, that $1,500 a month, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe we did, because when that loan paid off, what did you do with that whole debt service, that whole $1,500 a month, which a very small part of was interest, but that whole cash flow?
At that point, my PUA allotment that annual allotment was like I'd already max funded for the year, so I couldn't, you know, for that, because again, because it, for me, it's my priorities are before I do anything, before I look at a new investment, before I look at whatever, my personal goals and objectives are capitalized first, right? So before I look at spending money, you know, spending money, investing or whatever, it's how my initial goal is to max fund. That's the game. Max fund, not 80% fund, you know, the flexible LPUA on my policies, but max fund. That's my personal objective. So that's as simple as it is. So for that policy, my, you know, at the end of that duration was, okay, well, can I put that $750 every other week or $1,500 a month into my, directly into my policy in that policy year? That answer was no. So I was like, well, okay, well then I'll just start setting it aside. And cause I have a couple of, in a, my traditional, you know, in my traditional banking account, I have different nicknames for my accounts. So, and this is like, I have one for PUA. Well, I have multiple. So I have PUA, and then I have the name of the insurance company with, and then like one of them may have the number for the LPUA allotment, the max funding. So cause I know my PUA allotment numbers for each one of my policies. So like, for example, like, so anyway, so let me finish that thought. So I have two separate ones for each one of this specific company's PUAs. I have a different account for another company's PUA. And then I have like a fun money account. Like I put, you know, like my vacation money, or if I want to go buy something stupid and I don't want to have, you know, to think about it coming out of lifestyle. Like I, every 2 weeks I put money, like I transfer money into this account, into these accounts. But what I do is I no longer carry that debit card or anything associated with any of those accounts in my wallet, because they're non-negotiable in my mind. Does that make sense?
Yep.
So they don't get the leak to go buy dinner one night. They don't get to go buy new shoes. Like that's not the purpose of like this. These are different horses, right?
I got it. So yeah. I got it. So you, yeah. Which I, you know, have been there several years. I'd rather pay the full premium that I could pay. I want to pay the full premium that can be paid in each policy that we own every year. And then when we borrow against those policies, you know, the loan repayment, and we pay ourselves, we charge ourselves, therefore pay additional interest above the life insurance company. We use a segregated checking account, right? Mm-hmm. So just like, sounds like you do, you have your cash flows, you have the whole cash flow, you know, lined out where what money's going, what cash flow is going to even what policy, what company.
Right. Like so, for example, like right now, like my earliest policy, my originating policy with you, like its anniversary date isn't for another 5 months. So for the last, I think 3 or 4 months, I've been setting aside every pay period for when June comes. So I'm about maybe, I don't know, maybe I haven't looked at it like in a couple of weeks, but I'm probably about 30 to 40% ready for June. Like, you know, so that's, again, I'm just turning like little slow crooked numbers. I'm not living off of this money, and I know it has a purpose. So it takes me like, I don't know, like 4 minutes every 2 weeks to do this. And it's like, and because I know like one, it's the best 4 minutes that some of the best 4 minutes I'll ever spend. Cause it's a quiet time for me to do this. It's really satisfying. Now being doing this for like, you know, 4 to 5 years, I see the tangible, I've recognized some of the intangible benefits of practicing this concept. And it's just now, it's just foundational to what I do. And it's part of my little quiet time, you know?
Yeah. So did the cash flows are going to accumulate somewhere. If the premium is paid full each year, so your cash flow is accumulating until you can pay a premium, right? Mm-hmm. And so have you been successful at paying the full premium? You know, and this could be too personal, but like when on an annual basis or when the premium is due, you're about 30% there in that one account for the one policy. I mean, how close are you going to be by the time you get there, do you think?
And about two-thirds for that policy.
Two-thirds. Okay. So cash flow will be able to just continue to full pay the premium.
You know, prior career, you know, in the beer industry and stuff was, you know, part of the lessons in continual learning that we would, like not on the job training really, but just continuous learning was, I forget the author, but they, you know, I remember the concept was, you know, if you were to divide a piece of graphing paper, like, you know, the X axis and the Y axis, the top, there would be four, what they call, four phases, like, and so like the top left would be phase one, the top right would be phase two, bottom left would be phase three, the bottom right quadrant would be phase four. And I've always remembered, like, the top right phase two was the title planning, and that's where you're not putting out fires or living in some sort of chaotic environment from an organizational standpoint and, you know, an execution of your job and responsibilities. But phase two was, if you can, I can't remember if it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It wasn't that, it was some other leadership book. But phase two planning entailed, like, when you actually have some quiet time and you can only, not only operate in the here and the now, but you can actually plan effectively for what's to come. Like, that's the place where you want to live, where you can, yes, there's going to be distractions and things that you need to take care of in the here and the now, but you're always, you have a conscious posture of planning for the future. And so, like, that's kind of how I try and think about a lot of things that I do now professionally, but and more so personally. And this is part of my phase two planning. So I have a little worksheet that I created, I don't know, like 4 years ago when I started working with you. Is I just devoted 2 hours up front to create a spreadsheet, really basic, but it helps me organize where, you know, the jobs of the horse. And it has my maximum PUA allotment. Every time I make an LPUA payment, I just insert the number, and it reduces the amount of outstanding LPUA that would be acceptable under my policy. And I just have it conditionally formatted. It's green at the top because it means that I can continue to put more money in. And then when it turns red, just like a stop sign, stop, because you can't do it anymore. Right. And so I just know, I have it broken down by pay period. On average, I should be at this dollar amount to contribute to my LPUA to max fund it. That's the minimum, right? Because that's my beginning goal, is to max fund. But like right now, I know I'm ahead of schedule. So whatever the average is, if I just pay the average, I'm still going to max fund it early. Yeah. But if I, you know, but now the game is like, well, how quickly can I, you know, can I max fund it so I can start building for the next policy year? Because that's just the game that I play in my head. It's necessary for me to play games.
Yeah. I got it.
Yeah.
So has that helped inform you of when you might want to or should consider buying another policy or expanding your system?
Yeah. And we're talking, you and I are talking about that now, and planning for the future. And that, I think that, excuse me. But again, that's part of that phase two planning that I try and stay in. Like, if I know that maybe I have some contractual raises that work coming, well, that new dollars, needs a home. Right. And I can think about that now. Well, what if I can't? These are the questions that I ask myself. So what if I don't want to, or I can't afford that premium currently because that date hasn't been set? Well, it's been talked about multiple times on this podcast, and in person, is if you don't know about convertible term, there's a homework assignment, you know, and, being able to convert a portion of some of the existing term that I may or may not have future convertible term, being able to convert portions of that convertible term to future policies, IBC policies, like I'm already set for if I need to exercise some of that convertibility, or I want to start a whole new policy. The beautiful thing is I have options, right? Yeah. But then part of that too is, you know, like I've been tweaking things nutrition wise, not that I was, you know, completely a circle or anything. Just right now with market not making sense, doing all these, it's like, well, what can I control? Like I can control the things that I'm learning. I can control my nutrition and fitness. Like maybe I'm going to take some more ownership of just playing around with, you know, like just the physical well-being and spiritual well-being. I'm like, maybe this is a good posture just to spend some time on that. And so that's just
you look good. So good.
Yeah,
job.
I appreciate it. Yeah. I'm getting old, but I'm a spry young lad. Yeah.
This guy's stout as they come, man.
No, I'm a work in process.
Yeah, aren't we all? But I think I'm getting softer.
I know. Yeah, you are getting slightly more lovable.
Thank you. Yeah,
you're welcome.
All right, so what do you want to cover? Anything else? Any additional points?
No, I just have. I made a note, and we may have talked about it, but just something to like two things from the book, if you don't mind. Becoming Your Own Banker. And this goes back to reiterate, and again, I've mentioned it once, but it was really meaningful because I was already thinking about it from right around the 40 to 50 minute mark of podcast number 2245 that you had with Ryan, when it's talking about jumping over the jumping is right over the control of the entity and who profits from the banking function. So you guys made reference to page 17 and Becoming Your Own Banker under the problem. And Ryan read like, well, this means that the interest portion of every dollar spent is perpetual, meaning that it continues forever. And it never, and the second part that wasn't read, but is, you know, it's equally as important, is it never seems to dawn that it never seems to dawn that the volume of interest is the real issue, not the annual percentage rate. Volume. So, like, I just try and keep it that simple. This is volume. Who cares about the rate of return? Because it's all in-house. I'm just worried about volume. And then, you know, when we were talking about earlier about, you know, kind of skipping over with the improperly designed policies and stuff that are out there, with, you know, 1090, 397 or whatever you want to call it, that's not infinite banking. Going back to, you know, the five tenets of thinking long range, like page 27 under, it's part of the review of part one in the book. Nelson just writes, it's under section 6 of the capitalization phase. And he just says, it's going to take time and discipline for several years. Yep. Don't expect to get rich overnight, but the rewards later on are worth all the effort. So it's time and discipline.
Yep.
And then just that consistency of human behavior, that we're the most influential part in this whole equation, I think is, it can't be underestimated. And I needed to be reminded of it.
No, I love that. So it's Becoming Your Own Banker, page 27. I think this is a fifth edition. Yeah, mm-hmm. Fifth edition. And the review of part one is what you said, number 6, a capitalization phase. It's going to take time, discipline for several years. Don't expect to get rich, but the rewards later on are worth all the effort. Just what you said. Mm-hmm. I think that, the capitalization phase is going to take time and discipline for several years. He's not implying that you should only pay a premium or you should only capitalize your system for a few years. You know, I just want to point that out, right? Because I know that an awful lot of, and I've done, I think there's a talk out there on the policy, the different types of policies, the different structures that Nelson used in becoming your own banker, but I'll always go to equipment financing and the different illustrations that are in there. And he just illustrates in illustration number one, the premium is paid for 4 years. And there's been an assumption within the Infinite Banking footprint for as long as I've been associated with the Nelson Nash think tank or Nelson Nash Institute, which was 2012 or 2013. And then prior to that, there has been an era in thinking that you should only pay in a short time period. So illustration number one, equipment financing, page 64, Nelson illustrates a premium being paid for 4 years. And that's what's illustrated there. Okay. Well, if you go to illustration number two, right, and then of course you're jumping right over exhibit B, page 56, what he's actually financing. Right. And so he doesn't start financing until illustration number two on page 59. And there's actually premium being paid on that policy from year five all the way to year 36. And being a paid up at age 65 policy, the guy can't pay anymore. And so I'm just bringing that out that, yes, it does take discipline for several years. And he's talking about the capitalization phase. That does not mean that you stop capitalizing, right? And Nelson, I know it's in one of his presentations. I don't know if it was recorded or not. But you know the old boy there in equipment financing? You know that logger from Eastern North Carolina? He's only about 65% efficient as he is in Nelson's work of, you know, financing a logging truck every 4 years. Well, he was also financing machinery like bulldozers and then the tree shearer, that big old machine that can cut a tree off, shred it, and chop it up. The guy was only 60-65% efficient controlling his banking need as it relates to that logging business. So I just want to bring that up. And it's heavy on the discipline too. You know, everything worthwhile takes discipline. If you don't have discipline, doesn't say many times, just go dig a hole, right? And jump in and have someone else cover you up. If you don't have discipline, you're not going to win in anything. And this does take discipline. So, all right. Are there other points? Because those are great.
No, points. I just the last point that I have written down, that it was a discussion that you and I had in Fort Worth in October. But Nelson died in 2019 when he was 88, if my understanding is correctly correct.
Yes.
Okay. In talking with you, just casually, you had mentioned that Nelson told you that it wasn't until like the latter third of his life that he kind of peaked as far as his productivity as a man, understanding all, you know, kind of Nelson as a whole, which means that if I just do the math, that it wasn't until like 58 and beyond that he was kind of reached his peak productivity as a human, as a man. And that was kind of like really impactful to me, because I kind of went and looked at, well, I know how old I am and I'm below the 58. So as doom and gloom as everything is, or whatever, like my most productive years, if I use this as a target, are way ahead of me. So there, it's actually encouragement for me to like continue push aptitude boundaries, you know, whatever that is. But I haven't even reached my maximum productivity. So don't let my own like limiting beliefs of I'm too tired or I'm just too busy or I'm just different, like, kind of die of that thinking, going like the most productive years actually are ahead of me, and like be willing to accept that and live accordingly. So that was really it.
No, I think that's very powerful. You know, he said the last third of his life was the most productive, and the guy had already been a pilot. He'd been in the Army Air Force. He'd been a forester. He'd been a real estate investor. The guy sang in the choir. You can't believe how that man could sing. All right. Don't know how many recordings there are out there. Probably not that many, but I mean, just unbelievable. Right. And so you got an economist, you got a forester, you got a pilot. He was a successful real estate investor. He's very successful in business and the life insurance business. And the most productive was the last third of his life. That is very powerful. That's extremely powerful. And I look back and I think I met him when he was about 72, you know, and when I met him, I'm working, you know, hard and long and needed to, and it was, I'm not griping about that. But he was working harder than most 40-year-olds. You know, when I met him, he was doing 40-ish, 10-hour seminars a year. And, you know, maybe some fewer, but I know a couple of years he did 50. At 72, 3 or 4 years old. You know, and he had funny, it gave him energy is what I learned, you know, and could clearly see after you watch the man, you know, meet people and give his 10-hour seminar. It gave him absolute energy, you know, so it wasn't work for him. It wasn't a chore. He loved it. But I think that's very powerful, you know, because I look back, man, at 72, you know, being as busy as he was and productive, I mean, I hope I can show up or make a showing, you know, but he was an incredible example of what to do, my opinion. So, okay, good sir.
Yeah.
What else?
I don't know. Just lastly, I mean, I can rattle them off because it's family, but Sue, Cindy, Carla, Justin, Jake, Jana, old Jules, like it's an extension of my family. Like if you get, I don't know what your relationship is with the office for other clients, you know, I'm speaking to the clients, but people who have, you know, prospective clients that are listening, like I know them like family, or I feel like they're, you know, they're part of my family when I call, like I know their voice. They know who I am. It's, I don't know, just to each one of them, thank you very much. It just feels like home. So I appreciate that. It's just awesome. Like, you know, like Jules and I trade messages every now and then because she's stinking funny and she's like a little sister or bigger sister that I never had. But like, and just like going, you know, going back to, you know, like to the event in October, like it's important for me to stay calibrated with what I'm doing and being around, not feeling like the Lone Ranger or going to an environment to where, you know, you're not the Lone Ranger. That there's, you know, I told you this in person, but if to those who haven't gone to the event, it's, I don't know, it's just kind of strange that we're all, it's just like, there's a, like a core type of person that shows up and is practicing this concept. And it's just like at the core, like really good people. Like, you know, when you bring your kid or husband and wife, and you know, like I've met, you know, Perry and William and Joseph this past year, the Andrews brothers from Mississippi, just like little extensions of people that I'm very thankful that I've had the pleasure of meeting and communicate with periodically, still. And it's just like where else has that happened? Like true, genuine connection, because we have something, many things actually like in common. So it attracts like really good clients. I really appreciate like overall like who you know, I consider like little extensions of the family. Like really good people that show up. Really fun.
I cannot disagree with you, sir. I mean, it's fabulous. You know, I feel like in. And I mean it, you know, we have the best clients in the world, you know, not just because they're ours, but, or we have a relationship with them, you know, I mean, it's like, I like people. I love people. And I think people are creative and I think most people are cool. Right. And I like that. So, that's exactly how I see our clients. You know, you always get that one maybe that, you know, you got to fire or whatever because they're not cool, you know, whatever. But how in business, you know, in business, what could be better than that? What could be better than that than working with really intelligent and smart? Did I leave that out? And I'm not, I'm sharing with you, and I have experience. This is genuine. Our clients are smart. They're intelligent. They're creative. And they're cool people. They're people that you would want to hang out with. They're people that you would want to know. They're people that, you know, maybe if you didn't hang out with them, it's like, man, I can talk to them about a lot of things that I can't talk about with other people. That's a big deal, you know, and that's really part of, I mean, it's a very important part of why we do live events, you know. I mean, I can put together a PowerPoint and I can have outside speakers. Ryan can put together a PowerPoint, you know, Jake can get up and talk, you know, we can all talk and share and learn something, you know, maybe hopefully is something new and be encouraging, which is important. All of that's very important, right? But the human element, you know, talking about the Lone Ranger, you know, he won the Lone Ranger Award. We give Lone Ranger Awards because I believe that's important. We can all be isolated, and that's what you get, isolation, right? If we're connected to people that think like us or act like us or have some kind of connection, they don't have to be just like us. I mean, that's the last thing I would want, for everybody to be the same. But people that you can just be comfortable. We're all doing the same thing. We're all paying stupid amounts of premium that would, you know, insult the CPAs or the tax guys, or that would cause your brother-in-law to insult your intelligence and my integrity. You know, you can get all beyond that. Everybody is there. They're paying stupid amounts of premium, whatever amounts they are, but we're trying to learn how to control the banking function. You know, what one guy does is something different than what one lady may do. I mean, we're all different, but we're cool and we're creative and we're smart. What kind of people do you want to hang around? You know, I rest my case. That's a big deal. The people, the camaraderie, you know, the interaction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you may have never met someone, right? Never before met him in your life. But as soon as you meet him, you might see him 2 years later at another event. And it's like there's no time passed. Hey, you get caught up. It's like your old friends. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. So thank you for saying that.
No, it's, I wouldn't say it if I didn't mean it, and I meant it. So I said it.
Yep. There you go. I won't have it edited out, sir. So,
yeah, please don't, especially not the Jules piece, because, you know, I'll get a text message from her in a little bit, you know, and get disciplined, which I need from time to time.
Well, I'll tell Jules you mentioned her, so she might just, you know, text you.
Yeah, but, you know, like, it's great. Like, just in the 3 years, you know, I've gotten to listen to Paul Cleveland. Well, you know, let's say just a high ranking officer of one of the companies that I own, which is that practices the concept, and, you know, just where else are you going to get that? And then you get to listen, you know, gotten to meet, listen to, eat lunch with David Stearns and Barry Dyke, and, you know, and it's like, well, yeah, they're the exact same people that they are, you know, from watching them on YouTube or listening to them on, you know, on podcasts and stuff. And it's just, and we can just talk, but it's just like, oh, this is what the familiar voice sounds like in person, the exact same, and this is the exact same person, and we can just be who we are. And it's silly. It's funny.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be Larry Silverstein, whom he didn't mention, you know, the high-ranking officer in the best company in North America to practice the infinite banking concept with, in my opinion. He's one of the smartest men in the home office. I mean, just tell, he was Nelson Nash's favorite home office guy. Okay. And mine too. Pretty sharp guy, smart guy. He really, he could get things done. You know, he gets things done. Anyway, and it's not very often that they, you know, speak at events like ours. As a matter of fact, there are no events like ours. But there's a lot of events, and, you know, they don't really get to go out to the general public and speak unless they're recruiting agents or agencies or what have you. It's a rare opportunity for a life insurance officer to be able to speak to, you know, policyholders. It's a big deal for them.
Well, and the fact that he was doing, I think he brought his wife this year, and just hearing him talk, and then and knowing that in 2023, the first time that he spoke, amidst all the catastrophic, coming out of that thing that happened in 2020 that we still can't talk about, and everyone's wondering, like the state of the economy, the world, are we, like what's going on, and then for a person such as Larry to get up on stage. And way more eloquently in 2023 just says like, hey, we're sitting on billions of dollars in cash. So is the future unknown? Yes, but we're pretty well capitalized. And just being able to hear that from the horse's mouth, I'm going like, we're sitting on billions of dollars in cash. Like, that's what we own. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool to hear just from, the person. So.
And this is secondhand information. We don't record, officers of the life insurance company. So that film doesn't exist where you can go and
get to an event
on purpose. So you get it from Michael.
Figure out how to clear your schedule for October of 2025 and get to Fort Worth.
There you go. Yeah. All right, sir. Any other closing points?
No, I just want to say thank you. So
you're welcome. Thank you.
It's always soothing to hear your voice. You're as close as I could get to Nelson, and I'm going to ride your coattails into the ground. So thank you.
You're welcome. I appreciate you. I'm not going anywhere. So I'll
thank you.
And I try to buy nice coats. So give you something to ride on. All right, Michael, you have fun. You have a good rest of your week. I appreciate you as always. I mean, people love you. And I think if someone will listen, they'll learn things. That's what
I mean. Get off the sideline. Even if you don't know you're exploring this thing, you don't know whether you're ready to get off the sideline and practice it. Well, you need to be properly insured. So how about you start with some convertible term so that when you are ready, you already have a mechanism to go in force. I'm not a financial representative, a CPA. I'm not going to give you any suggestions, but just thinking, get off the couch and do something. You're worth it. So,
well, that's a pretty good encouragement. Most people have things they love, people they love, charities, organizations that they love. There is an absolute place for death benefit and personal planning, financial planning, retirement planning. And even if you can't grasp this idea currently of the infinite banking concept or paying premium into permanent whole life policies, it's okay to be properly insured. All right. And then if you're going to be properly insured and you're going to pay premium in hopes that a company is going to fulfill their promise when you die and pay a death benefit to your people, you might as well bet the company and make sure they're worthy to accept your premium and for you to engage in business with them. And then if you're going to do that and the vetting is good, and maybe you have the privilege of what he's talking about is converting some or all of a term face amount into a whole life policy that could be designed as an infinite banking type policy, as taught by R. Nelson Nash. So that's actually pretty... that's pretty sound encouragement. So, thank you for sharing that as well. Okay, I gotta go.
Okay, likewise. I'm gonna go check the surf forecast, and if there's still waves, I'm gonna go get in the water because
what's the temperatures out there? I mean, it's 35, 40 degrees.
That's what wetsuits are for. Once you get past the numbness of the feet and the fingers, and you just kind of like, okay, it's just gonna sting for a few minutes, and it's like, well, let's go get some waves.
And then the fun takes over. I got it. Okay, have fun. Be safe. Do it. Take some video.
Right? You got it.
The GoPro, yeah. Okay, see you. Thank you.
All right, have a good weekend. Good to hear from you.
You too.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.